Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path. Hey everybody, before we jump into this episode, I just wanted to say, oh my gosh, I had goosebumps the whole time. When I release the video version, you'll probably see me just raising my hands in the air and like, holy cow, preach, kind of in those kind of motions. I had goosebumps. I think I said that already, but Corey Steiner is doing this real work, has made it happen in public schools, which is just inspiring, so inspiring to me, and something I've been looking forward to finding someone that's done this. So I can't wait till you guys get into this and listen to it. Also, just tell me what you think afterwards. You can always reach out on Twitter. I'm Ryan D. Bartle 1, or you can do The Peg Doesn't Fit. Still both of those on Twitter. I might move some stuff over to Mastodon or wherever just for fun sometime, just to expand what I'm like, some other options, maybe even Matrix, to explore that whole decentralized open source arena. But for now, stay on Twitter, follow us there, Ryan D. Bartle 1, and at The Peg Doesn't Fit. Both of those, I'd definitely love to hear from you. See what you think of Corey Steiner. And also, you'll notice a little bit of audio issues right at the beginning. It only lasts about 2 minutes, but I did not have my headphones in, and that caused some reverb on the mic picking up Corey's audio and feeding it back to him. So it only lasts about 2 minutes like that, and then it kind of normalizes itself. So I look forward to hearing what you think of the episode, and enjoy. All right, folks, welcome Corey Steiner. Did I say that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To the show. He is a superintendent of Northern Cass School District. It's northwest of Fargo, correct?
Yes, yeah, correct.
Okay. About how far away?
We're about 30 miles northwest of Fargo.
Okay. So enough that it's not the handiest to just run into town for something. And I think that's kind of the story that I'd like to hear from you and some things you're doing in your district. So, I always start with this question for everybody. By the way, if I put this on video, today is PJ Day at our school. We're having 12 days of Christmas, and I almost brought in a fake shirt so I could look professional on the meeting. But we're wearing PJs today for the 12 days of Christmas. So I start this question with everybody. Just tell us, how did you get to where you are today? Where did you start teaching? What is your educational path?
Yeah, I started teaching in a really small school in southwest North Dakota. It was an old three-floor schoolhouse, single section grades, about 50 kids in high school, to teaching social studies. Loved it there, coached a bunch of sports, moved up to a bigger school where I taught for about 4 years social studies, coached three sports, and then decided I wanted to get into administration. I was a principal for a couple of years up in northern North Dakota at a school called Delax Burlington. Moved over east to be closer to some brothers who were living in the eastern part of the state, became an assistant principal and principal, worked for the state for a couple of years. In the last 9 years, I've been superintendent for the Northern Cass School District.
9 years. My goodness. I'm going to put in headphones so I don't get feedback, weird feedback on here. So you are your district is a semi-finalist for this YASS prize, which is actually how I found you, YASS, for those listening, and they're asking for noticing districts that are considered sustainable, transformational, outstanding, and permissionless. And so just tell us, what about Northern Cass fits those descriptions? And maybe even if you could tie in a little bit about, well, I ask you this later, or I'm going to ask you this later, but how did you find out about this prize? What helped you seek this all out?
Yeah, the YASS prize, to be honest, it wasn't something we were familiar with.
I had somebody who reached out from our Department of Public Instruction said, this might be something you're interested in. And we put an application together and we're lucky enough to be selected as one of the 64 out of 2000. I had a chance to go to New York and found out we were one of the semifinalists and just got back from Miami last week where we did a pitch hoping to be moved on as to a finalist and maybe even the winner.
Wow.
The stop part of the YAS is, it's a very, very different group. And what I mean by that is it's from every sector, from ed tech to charter to private to public school. And really what we found out when we were there in Miami as we got to really dig in was they just want people to do better for kids. Doesn't matter where you're at, how you're doing it, whether it's your school choice, whether you're public, private, just let's just do better than we're currently doing. And let's just commit to serving others and being better for our learners that are out there. And for us, the STOP principles really resonated with us. We always say we're very permissionless here, and we do that because we go first. We're the first one in our state to become and transition to a personalized competency-based learning district. We were the first to take advantage of some legislation in our state to give us the freedom to do some things. And we operate on the principle of we're going to be brave before perfect. If you wait for perfect in education, you lose generations of kids. And through working with STOP and other groups, we have made it our moral imperative to be uncompromisingly learner and community centered.
I love that. Man, I'm going to have to go back and re-listen so I can write down these quotes. I love brave before perfect. I think it resonates with me in terms of just, I think within public education, you have to perhaps sometimes also just ask forgiveness later because there are so many structures and rules in place that I feel can limit our maybe our dreams and even our actions. And so that's also why I sought you out, because I'm in a small district like you, and I want to see if it can be done in the public world, because sometimes I think maybe not. But when I saw you guys in here, I was like, yes, maybe it can be done in the public sector. So that's exciting. What has been the innovation transformation process for you? Was it like this when you started 9 years ago? Or did you come in with this vision like, we're going to quit hurting kids by just staying as is?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the district was innovative before that was even a term. Okay. Whether it was being the first, one of the first districts in the state to be one-to-one. What my part in this conversation and discussion was to figure out, like, if we were going to provide a world-class education, which was part of our theme, our idea, like, what does that look like? And we could never define it. And what we figured out is it's because of what the system is. And people tell us the system's broke. It's not. The system's doing exactly what it was designed for. The problem is the system was designed 150 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the system is still about sorting kids and ranking them and deciding their path, not letting them do that. And all of us said, like, we're not okay with that. So we said, well, what do we do? And we said, for us, it's going to be a teardown of the whole system. And we were doing really well. Kids were going to four-year college. But what we realized is, like, that can't be the only thing we say a kid's successful at. And we were looking at kids who chose the workforce and saying, you fail. We said, no more of that. So we tore it down and started all over and said, what do we really want to be able to hang our hat on? And it was this idea of a learner leaving our building, and we can ensure they've acquired a skill set, portrait of a learner skills, we call it, that when they leave there will be transferable to whatever they choose to do. And we became what we call a choice-ready district, military, career, or college. I do not care which one, but we're going to give you every experience to get your first choice. And so this transition started with, like, this idea of, like, oh, it'll be technology and kids can go faster. And we realized the human part is so important. Connections are more important, and that pace is a four-letter word for a reason, and that's not part of the conversation. Progress is what we talk about, and so it's been a long journey, lots of bumps along the road, lots of mistakes, but a lot of beautiful things that have happened when we've empowered learners to do their thing, but when also we've given educators the ability to run and be who they are as well.
Oh, I love this. You're giving me goosebumps. My question, when I hear this, make all these choices, yet I also hear we're a small district. How do you do that with the manpower that you have? Because I'm sure that's fairly limited.
Yeah. I will say two words, teacher leaders.
Okay.
This transition is because of, and we've even changed our language. We don't use the word teacher. We call them educators, but I'll use teacher for this sake. This is because we had a teacher leadership academy where our educators were able to get a master's degree, and the professors that taught it also co-taught with myself and our admin. So all the work we did was towards advancing the work of the district. And this work came out of that. And the reason it's sustainable and doable is because the people leading it are our teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Our director of personalized learning, which was a position we didn't have, was a teacher leader in that program. Our MTMSS leads are teacher leaders from that program. What we found is this is not doable if you think you can just hire another administrator or I can hire a coach. You need to rethink how you're currently using the people you have. Find the areas where there might be some openings and start using them. That's been the game changer for our district being small, knowing we can't have 30 support personnel to lead initiatives.
Correct. Okay. How do you, like, let's say that a kid wants to do, I don't know, something that's not available in your area, but they really mm-hmm. want to explore that. How do you bridge that gap for those kids?
Yeah, so yeah, that's an issue, isn't it? I mean, in rural areas, is you don't have necessarily all the same things that big schools do or metro areas. So we tell kids, like, we're going to give you a big school opportunity in a small school environment. So if a kid wants to go to college and they know that, like, we decided to get our teachers the certification to teach college courses for a local university, and we paid for it. And so for the last few years, our kids, all their college credit has been free.
Oh, wow.
We've fundraised, we've done whatever we use ESSER funds. For the kids that say, hey, I want to go in workforce, we find a way to fund internships, paid internships, whether it's on-site, whether it's outside of here. If a kid needs to go into Fargo, then they go to Fargo for maybe 2 or 3 hours. They don't have to be in school all day. There's no reason for them to do that. So we've really taken our schedule and said, you know, do they need government from me, an old social studies teacher, or can they get that in another way? And would they get more out of being the social media manager for a startup, which we had a kid do?
Wow.
And so we look at that. And the other part too is if a kid says to me, like, I want forensic science, we're not big enough to teach forensic science.
Yeah.
Where can I go get that? That's not going to just be you regurgitating information, but a real experience. And then what people can we connect you with that will also be able to connect throughout your course to be able to understand and use it? And then can we find you a job shot or internship? So, like, our barrier is distance, but we've made a commitment to say, let's take some of the other barriers away, like schedules and time in a seat, to make sure they get those things.
Okay. Oh my gosh. My brain's going to exceed all of the time we have. Cause I'm thinking for my own application here, this is exciting. But I'll stick to my original path for now, just for the sake of time. Maybe we'll have to have a part two someday. Maybe I'll have to swing up to North Dakota and come tour.
Anytime.
When you're looking at where you are now, cause it sounds like you're already doing a lot of great things, what is your vision for what's next for the district?
Yeah. So we've got a couple of different things. We'd love to get to the point where we eliminate grade levels. And not just for the sake of doing it. The reason is simple, is I really believe in multi-age learning centers.
Mm-hmm.
Like our football team is multi-age. It works. Our basketball team, our electives, they're multi-age. It works. Kids can learn from others that aren't the same age. And it doesn't mean that like a kindergartner won't be with kindergartners 95% of the day. That will be the case. But if we can get rid of this idea of grade levels, people will start focusing on what kids do and don't know and about learning instead of about my age says I'm supposed to be here. It will now be you're here because this is exactly where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
So that's one of the big lifts we're trying to kind of get our head around.
Okay.
And then I think the other thing is we've got two things. We reset a middle school and we created something called studios, which are these little 6 weeks experiential opportunities. It's a little bit driven by educators right now, but kids are starting to take ownership of it. Uh-huh. If they're passionate about something, they get to explore it. They have to have an expert come into the building or Zoom in. They have to go to an expert outside and they have to create something for other than their teacher. So I have a learner right now that she's a high school girl doing this and she's actually writing a graphic novel. She's doing all the artwork for it on a women's equality course, Women Leaders in World History.
Okay.
Like it's amazing. And the reason was because she said, nobody looks like me in history books. We're like, yeah, created. And so that's our studios. And then the last thing we're really working on is we're going to create an alternative graduation pathway, not an alternative pathway, a graduation pathway based on competencies and not credits.
Heck yes.
So it's about a learner getting credit for outside the building. It's about them. Hey, I've worked a job for this long and I don't understand how to make change. And I went and was an internship for this architect. Give them credit for that. And understand that what happens outside of school is just as important what happens inside.
How do you, with that competency-based thing, I know some of this is maybe state-dependent. Are there any bridges you have to cross over to meet North Dakota State Department of Education rules or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say we're really lucky. We have a superintendent of public instruction that's an elected position that is as reform and innovative minded as it is, a governor who's extremely innovative.
Okay.
And so honestly, our work has been on the front side. We have lobbied like crazy. We have asked for legislation. We've helped write some legislation to create these things saying, if you do this, we will do it. And we'll give you a model that others can use. And so honestly, like, anybody in North Dakota who says that there's barriers to being innovative, they're not trying. Mm-hmm. The barriers are so reduced. And I've never met, like, when we want to do something creative, one of our first calls I have is a connection at the State Department. I will reach out and say, hey, can I come to Bismarck and sit down with you? And can we brainstorm? And we'll be sitting with our Department of Public Instruction trying to figure a way to create a model that can give more flexibility. And I travel enough. That just doesn't happen around this country like it needs to happen.
Oh, yeah. I think that's oftentimes that's one of the hangups. And I feel like it's great when I hear that states are thinking past this. They finally recognize, hey, we need to give credit for career competency, those kind of explorations. So it's pretty awesome that North Dakota sounds like leading the way in that a little bit.
Yeah, very innovative in that aspect.
You also said you would eliminate grade levels. Is that K-12?
That's what I would like to do. Yeah.
Okay.
And we had that vision right when we started this 5 years ago, and we just weren't ready. There's so many other little pieces and conditions you have to have in place. Like, and so we actually took one of the huge walls that's a little different than grade levels, and we got rid of percentage and letter grades. So K-12.
Good.
That was a gigantic lift, a huge load bearing wall to tear down for parents, for higher ed, for kids. But, I will say our kids talk about learning more now than they ever have. I very seldom hear them talk about a grade, which is a beautiful thing when that starts to happen.
So what did you move to when you say you did that? What does it look like now?
Yeah. So we've developed proficiency scales for all of our standards. Okay. We reduced standards by probably half or 75%. And then so for the proficiency scale, a 3 is where we want every learner to be. And we're going to do everything in our power to ensure they can get there. They still have a GPA, but it's based on a 4-point scale, just like a regular one. But a 3 is proficient. You'll get there. A kid will have to say, I want to go deeper and further. And deeper is not more. Kid who does 10 math problems doesn't do 20. That's not what this is about.
Yeah.
It's about another extension of learning based on a taxonomy. So we still have a GPA because colleges said they want that. And so we said, okay, we'll figure that out. We went to colleges and they said, we'll support everything you're doing, but don't get rid of a GPA. We're moving to the point where we'll get to a mastery transcript, a portfolio transcript. But it was a lot of work meeting with legislators. We had higher ed write letters of support. Parents that were upset about scholarships, we had to get law changed in Century Code about scholarships. But we've done all that. And now what I love about it is when I talk to kids, they're talking about, here's what I'm learning. And we've also had kids tell us the stress of trying to be perfect doesn't exist anymore. They don't have to be perfect because all we require for a proficiency score is 3 pieces of evidence. And so a test does not count any more than any other piece of evidence. So if you say, well, I want this worksheet to be a piece, great. The test that used to be 30, 40 questions, now a lot of them are 5 or 10, and they're only on the standard because there's no reason to ask on things that you're not assessing. So I think we're getting better at that. That's still a work in progress. But we're a couple of years from every kid in this school district never having a percentage grade. And I'm really excited for when that happens.
I love that. It sounds like you're able to push through a lot of the parent resistance, which I think in the last district I was in, they're moving towards standard reference grades. Mm-hmm. And
that is a lot of the pushback is parent brain is grade level, GPA, honor roll. Even that I have a hard time understanding what, not understanding. How do you show parents that honor roll doesn't really exist or shouldn't exist in my head? Because you're talking about, if you're really at the place you should be, you start every concept, not grade level even, you start every concept or idea at a one or a two, and you move towards that three and four.
Because if they have a three, they know it, and we shouldn't be spending time on that. That makes no sense. So if that learner gets it, why? Oh, you know how to tell time to the nearest 5 minutes, but let's spend 10 days teaching you how to tell time to the nearest 5 minutes. Like, that's the definition of insanity.
Yeah. Do you see behavior issues reduced in your district maybe as a result of all this?
I have. I mean, they'll tell you that learners are more engaged. Do we still have behaviors? Yeah, because they're kids. You're always going to have that. Mm-hmm. But what you're seeing is when, like, kids can own it, it's tough for a kid to sit there and say, I'm bored. Because when you can say, well, where do you want to take it? Well, I want to go this way. Hey, go. Mm-hmm. Do it. Oh, you don't want to take this course? You'd rather do it online because you're going to go after this passion? Okay. And we still have some traditional elements I'd like to see us work towards, like, reducing. But, like, it's tough for kids to argue and complain about a system that gives them a lot of agency and power in saying how that system operates.
That makes sense. You probably have a lot of less of the teacher-to-student resistance that causes a lot of the behaviors that typical are in school. All right. Well, we, for the sake of time, I know you're busy, and I definitely am too. We got to get on to other things. What helps you feel inspired? Do you follow people, districts, read certain books? Like, what keeps you innovative in your head?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, like, as much as sometimes social media drives me nuts with the negativity out there, you know, I've got some people on Twitter that I follow that, like, they're just, one, they're positive, but they're also giving us ideas. The Learner Center Collaborative, Katie Martin, is wonderful, an organization. We're, you know, it's amazing. We're in North Dakota. One of our biggest partners is Lindsay Unified School District outside of Fresno. Mm-hmm. We've worked closely with them for the last 5 years. We travel down and visit with them. They come up to our Personalized Learning Institute that we host each year. The more we've done this work, we realize it's isolating. So we look outside for a lot of connections. KnowledgeWorks and Transcend have been two great organizations that we've worked with. And I will say, even with the YAS Prize, you know, charter schools and us look different. Private and public look different. What we found out, though, is when you sit down and everybody has the goal of just being a little bit better than we were yesterday, holy cow, there's some power in the room. And what I found is my vision of what a charter school is, or what a private school does, even though I thought I had an understanding, was we can work together because we have the exact same why. We want to do what's right for kids. So I'm looking at schools that have said, I don't care what people expect. We're going to do something that's right. And, you know, the other part is everybody will tell you this is hard. And, oh, my God, is this hard work. Hardest work I've ever been involved in, the most fulfilling. Mm-hmm. But because something being hard isn't evidence it's wrong.
Right.
And sometimes we have to make the decision to just commit. We don't need consensus in this. And I tell people that. They're like, well, what if you don't have buy-in? Ugh, gross word. Consensus, gross word. Can you commit to doing what's right by kids? And not every educator has to be at the same spot, just like every kid isn't. And if we create a system that's agile and flexible enough to realize that, like others have throughout the country, wow, amazing things can happen.
That, oh my gosh. I can't wait till I get off this call and I can tell some of my teachers who are starting to feel enthused about making change to just, like, you got to listen to this guy. Oh. This is so exciting.
Our teachers will tell you this. Like, I'll just share this last thing, but I had a board member, because it's hard work. And so we expect our people to work hard and to be innovative. And they asked, they said, you know, are you considering leaving Northern Cass? Do you want a beer? Do we have to change back? And they said, if you change back, I'm leaving. And everybody up there said, if you change, we're leaving. We've done the hard lifts. We've lifted the big pieces. Now it's when it's getting to be fun.
Good, good. Oh, so you've got that teacher buy-in, that enthusiasm, the commitment.
The commitment to doing what's right for learners. And then to figure out, like, that they also realize that they're doing something that isn't done across the country in a lot of places.
Yeah.
So I tell them, like, you're a trailblazer. Take pride in that. Go home at night and say, I've said, you are fundamentally going to transform education. You are going to be part of a movement. And that should make you excited, because if it doesn't, I don't know why we get out of bed in the morning.
Right. Exactly. How can my listeners best follow you or get in touch with you?
I mean, they can follow me on Twitter. Certainly it's Corey Steiner 10, I think it is. But honestly, if they reach out to our website, if they would shoot me an email, honestly, I will tell you that everything we have is consumable and editable. We don't PDF anything. If you want it, we'll share it with you.
It's open
source. I will connect you with any one of our educators or teachers. It's one of the things we said when we made this movement is we will give back. We have a personalized learning institute that's like we had 13 different or 14 different states at last year.
Oh, my gosh.
We are trying to give back and create something that just everybody feels fulfilled, and we keep people in this occupation because they know they're making a difference. So like whatever people want, they will get from us.
Excellent. With that personalized learning institute, let's say I have somebody that's out there that wants to jump in. Is it for districts, or how large of a group do you accept, or how does that work?
Districts, buildings, leaders, counselors, special ed, like we have pathways for almost every group. We bring in major keynoters that stay and do breakouts, so they're not just talking and then patting you on the back and walking out.
Uh-huh.
We've had huge districts. We had the State Department of Ohio send a handful of people last year. All over. We have kids. We had a kid panel from California last year that flew up here and did that. So this is for anyone, even if you just are one person that wants to start, or if you're a team or a district. This has coaching, game planning time where you get to do that. It is a very unique approach to trying to do this, because we want to make sure it's sustainable for everyone.
Is there a place that we could find that information?
You go onto our website, northerncastschool.org, or you shoot me an email. All that will be updated here come January. We're just ready to start opening registration. Mm-hmm. And I tell people the other part is you're going to go to a two-day conference. You're going to see 3, if not 4 national speakers. You're going to get time for great breakouts led by teachers and people in the field. And then you're also going to do it for like $100. It's a ridiculous deal. It's not about making money for us. It's about building momentum.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Corey Steiner, for being on the show today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And let me know if you ever need anything. We'll do anything we can for you.
Thank you.
All right.
Holy cow. If you're blown away like I was, once again, Corey said reach out to him at Corey Steiner 10 on Twitter. And then also just look up his school. You can reach out there. I also found the website they have that shares their information for their individualized personalized learning summer conference. So you can find that information there as well. And on there is another link to actually send him an email. And like he said, he can direct you to any of the teachers at his school that are proud to share all the great things they've got going on. That website is northerncastschool.org. So check him out there as well. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to next time.